Wrestling Nostalgia is back, and tonight we're going to be looking at one of the more controversial heel turns in the history of professional wrestling, with Stone Cold Steve Austin turning heel in 2001 in Houston at WrestleMania 17, aligning himself with Vince McMahon the night the unthinkable happened. Let's get everything started right now.
It's time for your weekly fix of wrestling nostalgia when we look at wrestling's past eras from the Attitude Era to the Reality Era.
I'd like to think that maybe this company will be better after Vince McMahon's dead, but the fact is, it's going to get taken over by his idiotic daughter and his doofus son-in-law and the rest of his stupid family.
To today. Here on the WWE Podcast.
Hey guys, welcome to Wrestling Nostalgia here on the WWE Podcast. And great episode tonight. A really fun one with Stone Cold Steve Austin's heel turn. I believe we have covered this in the past. If we have, it's probably been many, many months. But, you know, given the fact that it's been a long time since we've covered it, if we have, I'm sure we have. If someone went back, you'd probably find somebody who said, oh, yeah, you guys already covered it. What are you doing? Well, I won't have the same perspective twice. I think that it's fun to be able to even do a repeat episode with different thoughts, different ideas, different ways to look at it. So it's really a very, very interesting heel turn with Stone Cold Steve Austin attempting to be the hottest heel in the company. And it didn't work out that way, the way that he envisioned, and it just never felt right. But we're going to listen to some audio the night that it happened. I remember watching it live. I'll give you my in real time thoughts in my brain of 16 years old, I believe I was. So let me know what you guys think as well. So we're going to get to that in just a moment. But first, I don't know how I can start the show here without talking about Pat Patterson. I'm sure everyone has heard at this time. If you haven't, Pat Patterson has died. At least I don't know the reason. I don't know if he was dealing with some kind of ongoing illness. I don't know what the issues were, but he is, at the age of 79, he is gone. And it's, you know, it's always humbling when this happens. I don't know about you, but whenever we have wrestlers pass, it somehow strikes a personal chord with us, doesn't it? Yes, family and friends, much, much more. I'm not saying that wrestlers that we don't know or have never spoken a word to impact us more than our friends and family. But that being said, there is something that strikes us with being wrestling fans, following somebody for so long. Just somebody's always there and then they're not. And Pat Patterson was, from everything I hear and everything I've seen, was one of the good guys. And I don't mean that in a babyface fashion. I mean, he was a legitimately good guy. And one of the more creative minds in wrestling, one of the best finish guys in wrestling, and that's coming straight from Ric Flair, Stone Cold Steve Austin, The Rock, about this guy being the best, having one of the best creative minds, particularly with knowing how to come up with a finish for a match. So definitely it's going to be, I'm sure, hard for the McMahon family, who are really close to Pat Patterson for many, many, many years, decades, his family, his friends. But as fans, it still does hurt. And it just, you know, it's weird because there's always some these big chunks of time that go by where, you know, you don't have somebody pass, and all of a sudden you're like, it's been too long, right? You just feel it coming. There's always something that happens. Somebody dies, heart attack, whatever. You know, like if it's not Roddy Piper, it's Howard Finkel, right? It's always something, somebody, Mean Gene, and it just brings you back, right? And it grounds you again, where, you know, and sometimes you can feel it coming. You're like, it's been like 5 months. No one significant has died in wrestling, you know, and you can kind of feel it coming. And, you know, we got, obviously, Pat Patterson was next on the list. But, you know, he really was obviously the most famous claim to fame he has is that he was the first Intercontinental Champion. But in the Legends House, the show The Legends House, he had a really big moment in that show, and I'm going to play that for you guys right now. It's only a minute and a half, but I want you to hear this in full. So here we go.
From where I come from, what I have nothing, no family, no money, and I ended up with Vince working in the office. To me, that was the biggest achievement of my life. But there's more to that, guys. There's more to that. Sitting here tonight, I'm going to say something that I would never want to say publicly. But being here with you guys, for once in my life, I'm going to be me now. I survived all this being gay. But when he just let it go tonight and made it happen, I started tearing up. My fellow Legends mates started tearing up. I lived with that for 50-some years. Yeah. I had a friend with me for 40 years, and I lost him because he had a heart attack, and I ended up alone. I survived the business. I did. I'm so proud of me. It's tough, guys. It was tough.
We love you, Pat. We've always loved you.
I gave my life to the business. I don't regret nothing. And for the rest of my life, I want to be happy.
So that is a quick little a snip of his basically coming out. And I don't know how legitimate that was. I mean, it was on TV. I'm sure maybe some of the guys probably already knew. I don't think it was produced. Given the real emotion from a lot of the guys, and sadly, in that particular scene, that I think this was in 2014, most of them are dead. The guys sitting there were Howard Finkel. We had Roddy Piper in there. So it was kind of like, you know, it's pretty humbling to see all these guys obviously are no longer here, right? So I just wanted to address it right up front with Pat Patterson and share that little clip with you guys, you know, because I think it's important, and I'm sure that it'll be shared much, much more as the days go on, and WWE will probably do some kind of tribute package to Pat Patterson, and rightfully so. But okay, well, enough of all of that. Let's get into the wrestling nostalgia and talk about one of the biggest, weirdest, toughest heel turns that I've ever experienced, ever. You know, when somebody turns heel, and think about this in your own wrestling experience, when somebody turns heel, typically it's exciting. You know, it's exciting because, oh man, we're going to see a new version of this person. We're going to get to see what their nasty, evil side is. We're going to get to see them in a new light. We're going to, you know, we're going to see what this guy has on the dark side of his soul. And it's exciting because it's like, oh, heel turn. And it's, there's nothing like a heel turn to headline the wrestling websites. There's nothing like a heel turn to get people talking. A babyface turn isn't as exciting, is it? A heel turn, just the phrase heel turn just flows better. Babyface turn, it doesn't really lend itself to the same type of impact, does it? The heel turn, it's just such a it's such an attention grabber. So you know, again, typically though, when somebody turns heel, you're excited, you're like, oh man, what's gonna happen, who are they gonna face now? And in all of the years that I've been watching wrestling, all the years, which may be more or less than you since 97, I have never experienced a heel turn ever where I was not excited, or I was a little bit down on it. I was actually, you know, or it was just tough on me, or I didn't want to see that side of that character. Never. I've never experienced that with any heel turn except one. And that one you guessed it, is the Stone Cold Steve Austin heel turn that took place at WrestleMania 17 in Houston against The Rock. It would be their second of three meetings at WrestleMania for the WWF Championship. And yeah, the audio is going to come. We're going to get to the audio in a minute. But to kind of set the table, the reasoning for Stone Cold Steve Austin's heel turn, per Stone Cold Steve Austin himself, was that he felt he was getting a little bit stale. That he needed to do something big with his character. That he needed to refresh, hit the reset button a bit. And he wanted to, and I give him all the credit in the world, he wanted to flip the script completely on its head. And typically, again, this is per Stone Cold Steve Austin himself, when you're as hot of a babyface as he was, if you turn heel, a lot of times you're as hot as a heel as you were a babyface in that instant, in that instantaneous moment. Hulk Hogan, good example, right? Turning heel at Bash at the Beach. There are moments in which there are examples of that, of the heel turn. Bam, out of nowhere, they're heel, and you thought they were the best good guy ever, right? You love them, and then in that instant, you hate them. Well, for Stone Cold Steve Austin, I don't know about you guys. I never wanted to hate him. I never wanted to see that evil side of him. He was the anti-hero anyway. He was kind of a heel anyway, in a cool way. He just wanted to turn it on even further, attack the fans. I remember he even attacked Jim Ross, bloodied Jim Ross in his hometown. There were moments where I was annoyed by him and I did kind of want to see him get his ass kicked. But then the other part of your brain, the louder part of your brain is like, no, wait a minute. This is Stone Cold Steve Austin. I don't want to see somebody beat him up. I want to see a stunner. I want to see beer. I want to see middle fingers. And it became difficult. And it was not an easy road for him to travel because people didn't want it. Can you say that for any other character in the history of wrestling where you didn't want to see the other part of them, the other version of them? No. Stone Cold wasn't... The Stone Cold character itself was never heel. Nor do I think it should ever have been heel. Yes, Stunning Steve. You had... he was in ECW. He had a couple of heel roles. He was part of the Hollywood Blondes. They were heel for a while. But in the Stone Cold Steve Austin character, never... He was never a heel, but he acted like an anti-hero. He had kind of the edginess of a heel, but form-fitted into a babyface character where he got the crowd involved and it became like participation with the hell yeahs, the middle fingers, the beer, the celebrating, and he was believable. That is the key to all of this, is that he was one of the most believable characters of all time. You couldn't see through it. You legitimately believed what you saw on TV was who he was. So when he turned heel, it was hard to watch. It was uncomfortable to watch. It just didn't feel right. It felt misplaced. It felt unneeded. And I applaud Austin for trying. I applaud WWE for trying. And they even tried again to turn him heel when he joined the Alliance and became the leader of the Alliance. If you remember, Stone Cold was heel. He went heel after WrestleMania 17, joined Vince and gave him hugs and everything like that. And then when the WCW ECW invasion started, Team WWF needed a leader. And Vince went on a chase from bar to bar and trying to find Austin, trying to rile him up. Even told Austin, I need the old Stone Cold. You remember that famous line on SmackDown? Where he even begged Austin to give him a stunner. And Austin kind of just moped and walked out. Eventually came back in the next Monday Night Raw to part the Red Sea, as Jim Ross said, and I really want to play that clip. That is one of probably my favorite clips ever of Stone Cold Steve Austin and Jim Ross, is when Austin returned to be the leader of Team WWF right before the Invasion pay-per-view, and Jim Ross going absolutely insane on commentary. It was a beautiful moment, probably one of the best moments ever in terms of the energy of Jim Ross. The moment that Austin had, the crowd reaction was just off the charts. But then at the Invasion pay-per-view that very Sunday, he turned heel again. It's almost as if he said, okay, I'm going to give you a little taste of what you guys want back, and then I'm going to pull the rug out again from you. And they tried by him turning on Kurt Angle in that match and having Austin become the leader of the alliance with ECW and WCW. And then from there, he just transformed back into the What thing. That's where the whole What came from, which I guess you could look at as a positive or negative. You know, the What thing still exists. It will, I don't think, ever go away. That happened in 2002. It's 18 years ago the What thing happened. And I'm sure there are days in which talent, Vince, everyone wishes that never existed. But it does. And that's where the What thing came from, was when he was in the alliance and being kind of a patronizing a-hole with the people that he was leading. And so, again, there were moments. I would say the only moments where there was some heat to me with Austin was when he aligned himself with Triple H and they went on the two-man power trip. That, to me, well, first of all, the two-man power trip was probably one of the most underutilized stories of all time. I never felt that got, you know, enough momentum, enough time to really flesh itself out. There really was so much there, and they scratched the surface. But when they started attacking the Hardy Boys, they attacked Lita. I remember that very well. And Undertaker and Kane came to the rescue. That is really the only time I can remember with the Brothers of Destruction coming after the two-man power trip that I actually had a little bit of heat on Austin. And again, this is my personal opinion. Maybe there were other moments with you guys, if you remember back that far. If you don't, really, really, you have to go see the heel turn and see the follow-up to it. It's, you know, they tried. They certainly tried. But the heat on Austin for me was few and far between, and all you were waiting for was him to snap out of it and just come back to us and stop this this kind of forced mirage that we're all having to watch at our, you know, not willingly. And it was just not comfortable. It didn't generate heat for most fans. I think it generated just awkwardness. They didn't know how to react because Austin's attacking the fans, calling them leeches. You know, Austin even grew out his beard a little bit to just change. He even, when he came to the ring, instead of holding up both arms on the turnbuckles, he just held up one. He changed his music a little. He changed his knee braces to red. I mean, he did little things that heels do, but in Austin, he was a baby face, a top flight, probably the best baby face of all time level. And it just wasn't the right role. So I just never thought that it ever really caught on. It was just me waiting for him to come back home. I didn't think it was needed. And Austin has said many times, because people have asked him on his show, on his Steve Austin show, that, you know, do you have any regrets in your career? If you could redo anything, what would it be? And Austin has been very steadfast in replying to those questions, saying, gosh dang, he said that, you know, WrestleMania 17, he probably, or in hindsight, he said he definitely would not have turned heel, and that he would have told McMahon in the ring and called an audible and said, watch the stunner, meaning I'm going to hit you with a stunner, we're staying babyface. He said he almost did it, and he said he wished he had, and it did cross his mind when he was shaking hands with Vince. And I remember in that moment thinking, he's gonna hit Vince with a stunner. You know, and it didn't happen. He just shook hands. They went on their way, and Jim Ross saying that, you know, Stone Cold has sold his soul to the devil himself or something dramatic along those lines. So we'll get to audio in a minute. But the last thing Austin said that I remember about this time period, beyond the fact that he regrets doing the heel turn, is that it was really a black hole for him in his career. He said that multiple times on his show. I think he even said it during his Broken Skull Sessions, which the Steve Austin show has kind of morphed into the Broken Skull Sessions on the WWE Network. He said multiple times at that point in his career, that time, during 2002 to 2003, late 2001 to 2002, is really a black hole for him because he turned back babyface in mid-2002, I think it was. He said, just a black hole, and he doesn't remember a whole lot. He wasn't in a great space, which also prevented him and Hogan from ever hooking up. He said that, you know, he was in his own head, that he was hurting physically. I know that he went through multiple divorces. That doesn't help. And he wasn't where he wanted to be professionally. He kind of knew that the Father Time was catching up with him. And he wasn't in a good spot. He wasn't in a good place, headspace, whatever the heck, you know, he means by that. Just a lot of personal and emotional stuff going on. And that Hogan and him never did business he blames it on himself. Because Hogan was more than willing to do it. And during that WrestleMania 18, between The Rock and Hogan, while it's iconic and one of the most iconic moments and matches of all time, it should have been Austin. Because as big as The Rock was, and he was a massive star in professional wrestling, he was never, ever quite Stone Cold Steve Austin. Never. He never quite reached the level of Austin. I always felt Austin was still that one peg above The Rock. So I just look back and I'm like, why the hell wasn't it Austin? And Jim Ross always said, well, the styles of Hogan and Austin wouldn't mesh as good as the styles with Rock and on Hogan. I call BS on that. I think that's a cover for the fact that Austin was not in a good place, that he wasn't willing to do business with Hogan. But to me, again, the money match, the bigger match is Austin Hogan. How did that never happen? You know, I don't know if I'm bitter about it. I'm just disappointed that Hogan Austin never happened. But okay, getting off track. But let's get to a little bit of the audio from this match. If you remember, too, and I can't show you this because this is audio, not video, but right before the match happened, there was a shot of Austin backstage, and he was looking himself in the mirror, just staring at himself intently. And that was very symbolic of him saying to himself, without saying any words, you have to look yourself in the mirror and look at yourself as a man and realize what you're about to do. Right? It was one of those moments. And during one of the most famous interviews of all time, interview segments of Austin and Rock in the locker room with Jim Ross sitting down in the locker room, and they had their segment right before WrestleMania. I think it was a Monday Night Raw before WrestleMania, where Austin said to Rock, I need to beat you, Rock. I need it more than you could imagine. So the desperation of a man that needs that WWF championship means that this man is willing to do anything it takes, even sell his soul to the devil himself of Vince McMahon. So there were clues leading up to the heel turn with Austin. And again, I was 16 when this happened, so my 16-year-old mind was very deficient in catching on these things and deficient in a lot of other ways at 16. But I never caught this. I just thought that it was him saying he needed the belt and that he was just intense leading up to the match, which is why he was looking in the mirror. But all of these things, obviously now you look back and it's all 2020. So let's play a little bit of audio from this match and let's have a little fun.
Austin scored with a right hand. Reversed.
So what they're talking about is Vince McMahon coming out after Rock hit a stunner on Stone Cold. Vince McMahon makes his way out, and Jim Ross and Paul Heyman are wondering, hey, what the hell is he doing out here? And, I mean, we obviously find out, and I'll play that audio in a minute as well. But did you also notice how great Paul Heyman is on commentary? I would almost say in some ways he's better than The King. In some ways. I mean, The King, Jerry Lawler, and Jim Ross, best combo of all time. But Paul Heyman adds something. He adds that element of just excitement and insight and intelligent commentary. It feels very organic. It doesn't feel very scripted, produced, whatever you call today's commentary. They're nothing more than just messengers. They don't feel the product per se, like they seemed to back in the early 2000s. It feels very robotic, very just kind of cutesy at times. I just don't feel like the announcers call what's on the screen. They're too busy promoting the next match coming up with some, again, cute little line to say, rather than getting invested in the match like the fans are. They are the voice of the fans, and they should be. And this is what Paul Heyman and Jim Ross brought to the table here. And I think we often forget just how good Paul Heyman is on commentary. Really, really loved it here. So, okay, well, let's continue on to see exactly what role did Vince McMahon play. I'm going to pause it right here, but this is where the conclusion of the match happens. Vince was there, obviously, to help Stone Cold. Hands Austin in the chair, hits the Rock. Rock kicks out, hits a stunner. Rock kicks out. And then Rock gets his hands on Vince McMahon, lays into him a little bit. Austin, very frustratedly, then continues to pound on the Rock. And here we get the conclusion of this match.
Anything, and damn it, I mean anything.
I love when Jim Ross loses his mind. I mean, when he starts cussing, there's something hilarious about Jim Ross cussing, like when he says SLB. I don't know why I can't help myself but pop every single time. This is the best of the best here. I mean, you have in this match, you have Austin, you have Rock, you have Vince, you have Jim Ross, you have Paul Heyman, and don't forget Earl Hebner, who has one of the best counts in the history of refereeing ever. And what I mean by that is the way that he counts a three count is the way that we should count a three count. It's dramatic. It's full circle. It's not too quick. It's 3 seconds. If you count the three count today, it's about 2 seconds. It's three taps in 2 seconds. I don't like how quickly referees count three counts today. It's not dramatic whatsoever. And Earl Hebner is, to me, the ideal referee that has ever existed. So you heard it. Austin turned his back on the WWE fans. They weren't even known as the universe then, thank God. But even when Austin turned heel, did you hear any boos? I didn't. When Austin aligned himself with Vince, did you hear boos in that moment? I'm sure there were some, but they were drowned out by all the cheers. Granted, he was in Houston, his home state of Texas, and the fans love Austin. I mean, it comes down to Austin can't do anything. There is nothing he can do to truly turn himself into a top heel. He's just a resistant babyface as a heel. And I was very resistant to it then. Rewatching it, it still gives me chills seeing that match, number one. Hearing Jim Ross lose it is still hilarious to this day. And it's one of the best matches in all of WrestleMania history. I mean, it's right up there with Michaels and Undertaker at WrestleMania 25. It's in that category. If you're going to rank WrestleMania matches in terms of their impact, in terms of their quality, this is, I think, in most people's top five, at least, if not top three. And did you notice, if you've seen this match, there were no high-flying spots. There were no suicide dives. It was not 100 miles an hour. It was easy to digest. It was a simple story they were telling. There wasn't 1,000 kickouts of finishers. And when they did kick out, you heard the fans freak out. You heard Jim Ross freak out. Why? Because it never happened. Almost never happened. It was special when it happened. It was on the right platform when it happened. A massive pay-per-view in one of the highest stakes matches you could ever think of. And again, this is something that Austin regrets in his career. And I don't know if you had played this out the other way, where Austin did stun Vince and he played Vince for a fool and used Vince to capture the championship, where he would be in his career. The what thing probably wouldn't have happened. So there's that. But I don't know if he would have been as successful in the back end of his career. I don't know. I mean, I think Austin was just fine as he was. But he was feeling stale and he wanted to change it up. And boy, oh boy, did we get a change from Austin. From there, I remember the Monday Night Raw after, where Vince came out and introduced Stone Cold as the new WWF champion. And Austin came out and pretended that he was going to then turn on Vince. And where he said, now that I got what I wanted from WrestleMania, and now that I got Vince McMahon in this ring by himself, if you want me to open up a can of whoop-ass on Vince McMahon, give me a hell yeah. I think those are almost the exact words. And the crowd goes crazy. Hell yeah. And then he said, that's not going to happen tonight. And then he calls the fans parasites. So he does kind of a double switch again. And so he's trying, but the fans are just kind of like, oh, no, Austin, don't. We don't want to boo you. It's not going to be fun. And it wasn't. It wasn't. I mean, there were some entertaining moments. We got the Kurt Angle moment, with the cowboy hat and the baking cookies, with Deborah baked cookies for Vince and, the hugging and all the kind of hilarious things. But I don't think it was worth it. When you look back at the body of his career, that he took this detour to be a heel, ago, of course. Hindsight's 2020. But all right, well, that is a wrestling nostalgia for tonight. I hope you guys enjoyed it. I missed doing this. I think I skipped last week to just do a mailbag, but mailbag is also coming. So I'm recording actually the mailbag after this, and it'll be dropping a little bit later than this show, as voicemails came in this week, and I'll be answering them. And lots of other content this week. Again, NXT and rivalries and the New Japan Pro Wrestling on Saturday, Michael Ritter's coverage of SmackDown, and then Mimi's ups and downs of the week. So lots and lots of stuff coming this week, as always. And then I'm back on Sunday night with your week in review. So I hope you guys enjoyed this. Let me know what you're thinking for wrestling topics, for wrestling nostalgia. I know that I haven't really covered the women a whole lot. That's been highly requested. So I'll do some of the women's end of things with nostalgia. But let me know. RealWWEPodcast@gmail.com. Thank you, everybody, for listening. As always, I'll talk to you next time.